Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Who are the radicals in Irish politics and who are the populists? Do we have a true left and right in the political system, or do parties blend their views and policies in order to reach the widest possible audience of voters? Well, over the past week, political parties have been gathering for their annual think-ins in preparation for the new Dáil term. But how do we see political parties? How do they see one another? And will any single party ever grow sufficiently to achieve the type of electoral domination that defined politics in Ireland for decades? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Teresa Reedy, political scientist at University College Cork and co-author of How Ireland Voted 2020. Also, John Downing, political correspondent with the Irish Independent and former deputy government press secretary with the Green Party. You're both very welcome. Thank you for joining us. So, Teresa, to set the scene here, over the period from 1932 to 2007, there were three parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Labour Party, and they dominated elections. Then you had the drubbing of Fianna Fáil in 2011, and that moment really changed things, and the subsequent elections since then have all been seismic, would you say, in their own way?
I think so. I think we'd probably start by saying politics in Ireland was ideology light for many decades. And that's not to say that parties didn't have views on how society and the economy should be organised, but these views didn't structure how everybody voted at elections, you know, knowing the candidate, local constituency work. And then maybe the party incompetence came into the list of how voters decided. That trend really was upended in 2011. And we've seen kind of quite substantial and notable changes at each election since then. And with the decline of the big two, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, what we've seen is as the kind of party competition has changed and adapted. Parties are now adopting a more determined ideological profile, and we see voters actually also being much clearer in their ideological decision making. There's greater alignment, if you want, between their party choice, and that's been consolidating since 2011. But politics is dynamic; it's always changing. So there's no guarantee that where we are right now will be the kind of end point or the new pattern or new trend.
So, John, for you, can you pinpoint any moment over the last, say, 10, 15 years that change the political landscape in this country?
I think particularly the demise of Fianna Fáil was a huge shock. As Teresa says, there were two tribes, and people felt a certain belonging one way or another to either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. The sheer collapse of Fianna Fáil, it was well signposted, but to be honest, in the February 2011 election, I didn't quite believe they were going to go so low. They went lower than the late lamented Irish Parliamentary Party. Only PR saved them. So after that, Micheál Martin, who had fought the most disadvantageous election imaginable in February 2011, took the helm and tried a slow rebuild. In fairness to him, he didn't get the support. He proposed where they needed to go, which was to become more urbanised, more secular, more left of centre, more woman-friendly in terms of female participation and attracting women voters. For various reasons, he didn't get the support. And this, I think, is the important point. He didn't get the support on the marriage equality referendum, nor on the repeal the 8th referendum. And for various reasons, the vast majority of his party took the no side in those two debates, thereby consigning the bulk of the party to being older, more rural and less attractive to women voters.
And do you think, Teresa, those issues, the fact that the party in the main was on the wrong side of social change when it comes to its membership, that has led to the fact now, according to its own report, that its own members in the main believe that the party has no clear identity?
I think it certainly contributed to a lot of the problems, specifically in Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil was so large and so dominant in Irish politics up until the late 20th century that its raison d'etre, its sales pitch, was that it was a party of government. It was competent, it managed the economy, and it didn't have to develop a specific kind of policy ideology that it needed to sell to the electorate. It simply was Fianna Fáil. And then that's completely upended in 2011. And not only does it now not have that kind of dominance and competence at governing, it's also in a much more competitive political landscape with a lot of other political parties that are very specifically identifying where they are in the spectrum. And I think there's two quite interesting things happening at the moment. In the How Ireland Voted book, Lisa Keenan and Gail McElroy have some really fascinating data which shows that the parties, in terms of how they view themselves, that there's actually remarkable consistency. I mean, the parties, essentially, we have data from 2007 to 2020, and parties place themselves almost on identical spots in the spectrum. So when candidates are asked, where does your party sit? Fine Gael is the party kind of furthest to the right, but it's really only barely over to the right. Sinn Féin is the party most to the left. Fianna Fáil is just below on the left. And it's consistent over a period of 15 to 20 years. Parties view themselves as being in roughly the same place. But what's very different is the orientation of voters. And voters have been changing. And if we look at the number of voters who class themselves as kind of fairly kind of hard left, that's been growing very significantly since 2011. And certainly those in the middle of the spectrum as well have been getting getting wider. So there are more left-wing voters and parties are somewhat kind of catching up with where the voters now are.
All right. Well, let's before we get to the left, let's, John, talk about Fine Gael. Does it have the same problem with identity?
It does to some degree. Famously, I agree with Teresa, Fianna Fáil without power have always struggled. In the few stints they did in opposition, they lost their shape. Famously, Sean Lamass, longtime Fianna Fáil kingpin, asked to describe the difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, pithily said, the difference is we're in, they're out. Fine Gael had been trying to define itself as a slightly left-leaning Christian Democrat party. Under Garrett Fitzgerald, there was an element of hybrid. In fact, some of the older people in Fine Gael will tell you that he wanted to go with the Social Democrats, for example, in Europe. But they are a kind of hybrid. I mean, no later than this very day, we will hear far more, we will hear about welfare and pensions and giveaways from Leo Varadkar, thereby kind of undercutting this image that they were the party of fiscal prudence. They were the ones who used to come in after the Fianna Fáil wreckers to tidy up the damage and put the accounts back in the black.
Okay, and we heard a bit of that from Leo Varadkar this morning on Morning Ireland. I want to talk about Sinn Féin, though, Teresa. Two polls at the weekend, putting them striding ahead of their political competitors. They became transfer friendly, didn't they, in the last general election? What is it about the party that has captured people's imagination?
Well, I think we get some more further and further from the Good Friday Agreement, and the kind of history of Sinn Féin is fading more and more into the past. We also have large generation of voters now whose only real memory of Sinn Féin is of a party of the peace process. So I think that's important in terms of the evolution of the identity of the political party. But the second thing that's very important is Sinn Féin takes a very clear left-wing position on a lot of policies. It's very strong on the redistribution purpose of the tax and spend system, and it was especially strong on housing in the last election. So it's really advocating from a very particular side of the political spectrum, and it's moving in the direction of the voters. So it's what I was saying earlier, that voters are actually moving to the left of the spectrum, and there are now more voters in that space than there have been in the past, and Sinn Féin is effectively connecting with those voters in a way that the other political political parties really are not doing in quite the same numbers. So it has moved more firmly into the space that the voters are in. And we know that first in the first instance is the economic crash in 2008 that really causes such a huge economic upheaval. But there is this broader question about the way in which globalization has changed the entire economy, and that you have those who have one great advantage from that and the kind of growing middle classes. But there are also very significant numbers of people whose employment is much more vulnerable and variable than it used to be in the past. They're much more uncertain. And there is a big question about whether the current generation may actually be worse off than the generation that went before them. And so there's quite a lot of kind of uncertainty, and there are large groups of people who are looking to the state to do more, to provide more certainty, more stability in their lives. And they're looking to the left of the spectrum, and that's where Sinn Féin is more vocal and more effective than some of the other political parties.
And John, after the last general election, people would remember no one would talk to Sinn Féin when it came to forming a coalition. That won't happen again, given the numbers.
I think it's far less likely. I think the odds are that Sinn Féin may well be the party of the lead party in government coming in the next general election. Of course, the challenge for them will be to transform these high poll ratings into Dáil seats, and it will be to position themselves where their views and policies are not so unfriendly to other parties, because they will need other parties to go into coalition. But the odds are, the things seem to be coming into line for them.
OK, now the Greens I want to talk to you about. And I mentioned earlier that you worked with the Greens in a previous life. The big danger for the Greens is that everybody else will steal their clothes.
Yes, that is a perennial danger for the Greens. If you look, for example, at the most recent Dublin-based South by-election, and you look at the Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin-based South, and the Green Party leader is also the Dublin-based South deputy, Eamon Ryan. Two of them are two big men going around on bikes. Very, very similar, and all of the parties over the years have tried to realise that to survive, they're going to have to speak to the Green agenda. I know from my own home, two young adults who have come through the school system, very conscious of the Green agenda, of the very serious threats to ecology, the environment, climate change, all of that. And it is an issue that is not going to go away. It's going to grow in prominence. The question, I suppose, is, I mean, and that is to some degree attributable to the persistence of the Greens. They came, they were almost wiped out completely, reduced to just three county councillors, came right back. They now have a high of a dozen TDs. But part of their challenge will be to remain, to keep hold and drive the Green agenda. Mm-hmm.
When everybody else is taking it up, because everyone realises that that's where it's at. On the Labour side, it drives them mad, Teresa, when we say Labour and the Sock Dems. We're talking to Éan Iriarán about this potential coming together of the two parties. It's understandable, though, why people would see that as potentially being one entity down the line.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they're almost indistinguishable from each other. When we look at the profile of the voters that choose them, they're very, very similar. They do particularly well amongst the kind of young, urban, left-leaning voters. And then there's also, of course, the historical roots of the political parties, where we see that they've kind of strong overlap in terms of the numbers of people who've come from the Labour Party who are now prevalent in the Social Democrats. And then the final point is, of course, they can have a much bigger impact if they were to potentially merge into the future. So if we're talking about coalition negotiations where there are a number of smaller left-wing political parties potentially looking to Sinn Féin to go into government, and if you're two parties of seven or eight TDs, you're in the mix. But if you're one party of 16 or 17 TDs, you have a much bigger voice in those negotiations. You bring more, you can ask for more. So, you know, there's a lot of ideological congruency within the two political parties, potentially some probably hostility because of long experience, but that will fade over time, and there is always the carrot at the end that they can do more once they unite, and to some extent there is an inevitability about that into the future. But the question, of course, is which will be the bigger part in that final coalition. But I'd leave it by saying, of course, Democratic Left and the Labour Party amalgamated before. The Labour Party was the much larger part at that time, but indeed it was the leadership of Democratic Left that went on to assume and the much more significant roles within the amalgamated entity.
Okay, and John, just a quick word from you on people before profit, solidarity, that side of things. Where's that going? What's the outlook?
Well, there is huge potential there for them because there is, inequality and difficulties and the gig economy and all of the things that Theresa was talking about, uncertainty of employment, all that sort of stuff. Their difficulty is disunity and an inability to submerge ideological differences, sometimes very particularisms of politics, which are not especially relevant to the day-to-day in constituency and the Dáil work. The challenge will be for them to try to overcome that and consolidate.
Okay, Dr. Theresa Reedy, John Downing, thank you both very much indeed. Dr. David Coleman coming up after this.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.